This episode of AetherStream is brought to you by Aetherflow Media. We would not be able to create content like this without the support of our amazing patrons.
Welcome back to AetherStream. Today, we're actually going to go back into our theory-style podcasting. So get your tin foil hats on. Spoiler warning. Wow. Spoiler warning. Yes, I made a noise. I'm sorry. We'll try that one more time. Spoiler warning for those who want to keep this a surprise. Though, just keep in mind, all of this is theories other than what Kroa says, because Kroa somehow knows facts, and we are not going to question anything he reads in books.
He's probably an Asian. Like, we haven't, like, accused him of it yet. Oh, actually, maybe we just did.
That would make so much sense, you know, with all the corruption.
And him knowing literally everything.
Yeah, and knowing everything. So.
Oh, my goodness. Just saying, I've been around for 12,000 years just waiting.
We're going to set up a poll on Twitter. Let's see how many people think that Crow is actually Elidibus. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh my goodness.
So anyways, as you can hear from our other hosts, we have Enki, Kroa, and Tilp today. So other than that, final warning on your spoilers, let's get going. So, you know, The Echoes of a Fallen Star is just one of those titles that you're like, are we gonna see something from another shard that was collapsed? Or are we gonna see something from the 13th?
So here's in my understanding of the concept of a fallen star, when I first saw the title, the first thing I thought of, and this is why we're doing spoiler warning, first thing I thought of immediately was Unikalhai. So I don't know who's anyone who's been listening had that opportunity to do the Warring Triad quests.
Ukulele.
Ukulele.
Look, it's tough. He has a tough name to pronounce, first of all.
It does. It is pretty difficult. It's like, I think it's Arabic, I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. He reveals himself to be one of the survivors of the 13th. So he comes from the void prior to its flood of darkness. And he was rescued by Elidibus, and he was sent to the source to help, you know, maintain the balance between the worlds. And that's why you're fighting a Warring Triad, because their existence could tip things the wrong direction. So they want you to slay the Warring Triad to protect the balance. And so when I see the announcement, Echoes of a Fallen Star, I'm watching this with my FC, and I shout, because that's the first thing I think about, is Unikalhai's speech, because he immediately says those words in, like, another context. So he says, "The truth is, I am not of this world. I was born of a different star, a child whose power of the echo was too feeble to save his dying world." So that phrasing, the way he put it together, that's what I thought about. So I personally think,
the void, basically.
Yes, I personally think Echoes of a Fallen Star is going to somehow tie in the 13th into the expansion. Because we're balancing, themes of light and darkness. We're balancing the concepts of, you know, the Sin Eaters and the floods. There's only been two floods that we know of, and only one was successful. And here's the cinch, right? Extra uber spoilers here, because this was revealed in 5.0, that because of the flood of darkness, it paved the way for the flood of light.
The twin calamities.
So yeah, they basically kind of, like, one was, by one happening, the other was to come to be. Like, it was like ebb and flow. You know, you have two equally opposing forces. Because one happened, the other was immediately primed to take place. And so that's why I think it's going to draw in a lot more. Because we stopped it, something is going to happen to the 13th as a result. I don't know what it is. I know it's empty now. It's been voided out.
Yeah, can you do to the void at this point?
At this point, there's nothing there aside from, you know, several thousand angry souls. But I feel that there's some sort of, because it was priming the way for the flood of light, and that flood of light was stopped, something is going to happen as a result, because the flood of darkness now doesn't have a counterbalance. And
yeah, there's consequences to our actions, and maybe we're doing a little too much good again.
yep. So Echoes of a Fallen Star. It also reminds me, you know, the power of the Echo. We have that connection with Heidelin. So did the survivors of the 13th. They also have the Echo. So do the Ascians. So it's going to involve all of us, I think. All the characters in the series that have been introduced with the power of the Echo. So I'm super excited. I know some big stuff's going to be revealed. They dropped that picture of Ardbert without any context. We're like, why is he back?
Yeah, I don't like that. I'm severely threatened by that. Like, excuse me, who is that? And why is he wearing my boy's face? You take that off. Go home and change.
At the end of 5.1 content, he was right there in Ewell Moor. Yeah. It's like, this happiness will not last. And it's like, cuts off there. And it's like, wait, what? What?
So we understand that the bodies of the five warriors of darkness, right? The original characters of the first.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them were recovered.
Right.
Yeah, Ardbert's body was never shown. That was his soul. That was his soul the entire time. We spoke to his soul throughout the entire length of Shadowbringers.
Exactly.
He rejoined with us because we're one and the same, but no one ever said anything about his body. And now we got this guy that looks just like him. So I'm like,
Somebody body hopped. I hate that.
Someone's body hopping, and I'm pretty sure it's either an Ascian or someone with the Echo.
Right, and I was curious about that, if that was the case. So I'm kind of happy that that's kind of the same flow through everyone else's mind. Also, for those of that are listening, the poll's actually posted now as we're recording, and it's actually probably going to end tomorrow for those that are listening. Do you think hashtag Croatoan is an Ascian? I have yes. I have yes, no, and hands down, he is Elitibus.
How about if we get a majority of yes or yes, he's definitely a Elitibus, you have to change your name in Discord for like a weekend or something.
That's fine. I'll accept the title. for what is an Ascian, but not just the title.
I'm just going to get all of my proxies here and just get them all to vote.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, I don't like this thing with Arbor. Like, man, how is he not like having flesh peeling off and stuff? Like, how is he not all gross by now? Because he died a while ago, right?
Oh yeah, no, and right. That's the thing. Ascians have the ability to possess the dead and maintain the corporeal structure while they have that possession. Because most, if not all, the 12th members, so like the Ascian, the Chalice, and the Sword, those the weaker ones that you met in A Realm Reborn. They were all on corpses. It was Elitibus, Alahabrea, and
including Thancred.
Well, Thancred. That's the thing, because Thancred was possessed by Alahabrea, and it seems that the Unsundered are the only ones that can take over the living.
Yeah, the Paragons.
Yeah, it's only when you are a Sundered Ascian, you have to use the bodies of the dead to continue your manifestation in the world.
That is something I'm a little more comfortable with than the idea of them having kept Ardbert in like a fridge for all this time. Yeah. They've just popped him out now to use him like a severed finger or something. It's just like, yeah, we'll use this now.
You know, thinking about it, I don't think there's any lands that are considered iced over. So yeah, we're he's just part of the drowned. I'm sorry. He's just been hiding in the fairy kingdom underneath everyone's noses.
And just to put the icing on the cake, the way Ardbert died was by killing himself because he had to kill himself in order to let his soul occupy his crystal of light so it could be sent to the source. So he took his own life and now his body is being used against him. Which, because it's technically you now. So
I
like,
hope he's intent. He's like inside the Warrior of Light or the Warrior
of
Darkness.
Get out of my body!
Screaming. It's like, wow, that is shady, heinous.
Yeah, yeah. The Ascians don't care.
No, they don't. That makes them shady as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, as we're talking about the Ascians, like, I know part of it with Emmett Salk's Phantom City, like you had you have here in the notes that the Ascians actually did get an official residence during one of its dev talks.
Yeah, they described during the developmental process, that's what they described it as, the Ascian official residence. That's all we got. We don't have anything else outside of the meaning of the name. So it was really funny because a lot of people posted on Twitter. I remember this when Live Letter, when the first Live Letter was going around, the amount of searching in Google for amnesis like skyrocketed.
Huh.
Everybody was trying to figure out what it meant. And so the definition of amnesis, it's a Greek word for reminiscing, for to remember a past life or a past event. And it focuses specifically on the Platonic idea that all of our memories and knowledge come from a previous life. So using that idea in context, we're going to be seeing a lot more about the Asians' past. I feel that Amnesis and Nair will like show a lot more personal sides of the Asian, if that makes sense.
Hopefully like, not being shady about our outfits or telling us that we're children.
Yeah. Yeah. Just more so because it's their memories. I feel like this is going to be a place of their memories. So they're going to, right. or whoa, what if you're just going, you're just in the dungeon and like you have an echo vision in the middle of the dungeon and then it comes to life. And then you're like experiencing it like, as you're running the dungeon, you're having an echo vision of
that
its past.
That is messed up and kind of different. I would not expect that to happen, to be honest.
I want to be an Amarotine while I'm doing it, though. I want
to
be.
That's what I'm saying. What if you take over an Amarotine? You're trying to like you're reliving that experience while you're in that area because it's the old ruin, right? It's the place that's the Ondo are living in. So it's the older place that's not Emmett Selk's creation. So there's a chance you're going to get to a point and then your echo vision is going to go wild. And then maybe that's how you do the dungeon. You're just in a memory the whole time.
Hello, fellow super beings. I, too, have a trashy outfit.
Hello, me from another shard. Oh, wait.
That's funny.
I'm just playing as myself.
We got to save that for another podcast because I have a script written up for that. We don't want to go into that too deep.
Boo. Okay.
They know, right? I'm so terrible. Script keeper. What a pain in the butt. Also, I like that they called it an official residence because everything about the Asians is just like, it's like playing a bit of Papers, Please, to be honest. It's very, it just seems very stiff. And they are kind of stiff. I mean, they're Uber beings. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if this screenshot is, and I'm looking at the Fallen Sites or Fallen Star main site. Sorry for the dogs in the background, but I'm looking at it and like one of the pictures, it shows kind of like a ogre. And yeah, I tagged Crow earlier today and I since deleted it because I knew I was wrong after I posted it. I mean, I thought for a second that was going to be part of the Eden Raids because of how it was presented. And I'm like, wait a second. This could be part of this new dungeon that we're going into.
Yeah. So I actually have to give a shout out to Gamerscape because they were talking about it when it was first released, or the website images. And so apparently that is the Cyclops summon from Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh!
So they got more crossovery stuff.
Yes! Yeah,
so a lot more of that, you know, the good old theme park Final Fantasy experience that 14 is well known for. So we're gonna have a hint to that. Not sure if it's gonna be like bring over the same concepts, but it's definitely the exact same design, just not pixelated. So it's kind of cool.
Okay, so I already got somebody chiming in on the Crow debate, and I kid you not, it says, not saying he's an assassin, but his vast wealth of knowledge and the ability to retain information is not something most mortals possess.
Oh my goodness.
I'm going to like that. I like this tweet.
I'm sorry, Crow. I just put you on the spot.
He'll cope. Asians cope with everything. They cope with getting dunked on all the time by the Warrior of the Light. And, you know, it's something you got to put with. He going to be fine. He going to be fine.
Yeah,
okay, so what do we have next?
So, I don't know. I just now realize I'm at fault for that comment I made about how I thought it was part of the new raid, and then I retracted it. I did not look at the words. I just went straight to the photos and like, yeah, that looks cool. Let's send that to Crow.
You tweeted and deleted.
No, I didn't tweet it. I posted in Discord, like, hey, Crow, this is part of the new raids. Shifty ass.
Yeah. Redacted.
Oops. I'm so sorry for that. You're probably like, why do I have a mark here?
Okay, so it says here, anamnesis. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. I'm sorry. Like, Grecian culture, don't come after me. Yeah. I was surprised by this, and this is a sentiment that I'm going to echo with a lot of other people that I've talked to about the patch notes, the live letter, and you know where they're going with this in general. Their plans to make one dungeon per patch, usually it's two, so I would like to see where the rest of that input is going, if they're only doing one dungeon, or if they're scaling back and that's it.
As far as I know, they said that their intent is to take
focus elsewhere,
relocate development resources towards other content, so they'll be able to focus on other things that they have planned down the line. And by doing so, they're just going to do one dungeon per patch as a result. So instead of working on two dungeons and having to split up the team and all that stuff, they can take those members and then put them towards like the new stuff we're going to get with a restoration with the new primals, things like that, kind of give a little bit more focus on that kind of things. I mean, it remains to be seen, because this was a plan made for this patch moving onwards. So there's
vague.
We got no reference. We don't know what might change as a result, but the idea is that other things will be developed far better, because they'll be able to put those resources to other things that may need more attention or gain more attention as a result. So things might turn out to be excellent come 5.3 onwards. So we'll have, we'll have to definitely see as the future comes on what that means for development as a full that with just one dungeon, where is that power? Where is that?
Where is it going? What do we get extra?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of excited now just to see what kind of stuff we're going to get. Cause like,
oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
If you're not giving me a dungeon, what shiny things are you going to give me?
Right. Cause do you know how much time could actually be going into those dungeons? Like from, I don't know their actual like plan of attack, but like when it comes to actually crunching in the coding just for those dungeons alone before texturing anything else, like all that going to something else, unlimited possibilities.
I want to know what that is.
We could possibly be getting, and I'm not saying this as like confirmed information, I'm just saying that it's a possibility that we may get the gender swaps of both Ruthgar and
that is a speculation. Girls. Yeah, that people were saying it is a huge maybe, but people are holding out hope, and you know.
That's what it is. It's just developmental resources that they don't have right now. So maybe down the line, there's a possibility if they're able to divert the resources towards making those new models. You know, they could borrow, the Rothgar or the Ronzo models from 10, but we officially don't have a single male Viera model in existence. They would have to make that from scratch. And that's the problem. The rigging, the 3D work, the
motion capturing,
details, motion capturing, they would have to put a lot more effort. So as long as they have the time, the people, and the schedule, who knows? We could see it. I don't think Yoshida would leave us out like that. I don't think he wants us to be upset.
He was one of the advocates for removing it in the first place, because he hated it from the original incarnation.
The 11 reference, because they were referencing 11 when they brought over the Makote and the Rogadins and had them specifically one race each, or one gender each, because that's how it was in 11. So, Yoshida did not like that, and that's why they made that. But at the time, I think they had more opportunity, because a lot of Realm Reborn was pre-used assets from one. There was a lot of like build, kind of like polishing and making it look pretty, but they didn't have to make things out of scratch. Whereas in Shadowbringers, we went to a whole new dimension. We're in a new world.
Everything's new.
Everything had like they used the base of the previous regions to suggest the similarities, and that was it. Everything else on top of that was new assets. So they probably just didn't have the time,
Yeah.
And that's just the curse of 3D development. It just takes a long time, And so I'm holding out. I would love to see a male Viera. I love their lore. I think they have really cool stories. I would love to make a male Viera. But I'm just, no, I'm not going to, I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. And I think they do have our best interests at heart. So,
yeah. That's another update. And this one's actually from one of our Aetherflow Media staff. And that is Himes. Warriors of Light don't usually put assassins on the end of this kind of blast. Usually there's more sound effects and explosions.
Look, we got a budget, people. We have a budget to work with. And that budget is maybe like some pocket lint. So I'm sorry. Like, I'd love to do the explosions and especially them black mage effects. I like some of those. If we can fit those into the budget, Serena, next, please. Thank you.
Currently sitting... Sorry about the dogs. Currently sitting at 5 votes right now. 20% says yes. 80% says hands down he is a Elidibus.
Wow. Wow.
Okay, so moving on from the discussion about races, got us a new beast tribe, and our favorite tweakers are back. Oh my god, they look like they're on drugs all the time.
I'm so the Kikun, excited.
For real?
Clink, clink.
that hat in that image, what is that? What kind of a fashion statement is that? Please,
it's like, someone. It's like an upside down pot. I don't know. Like, just like, it's fascinating because, you know, the Kikurin are already, you know, eccentric, and now we're gonna have their jungle versions with like bags on their heads. It's gonna be.
It looks like a poncho. I mean, I think
yeah,
it's a poncho,
like some sort
right
of like.
Like Peruvian inspiration right there.
Which is cool. Oh, yeah. I'll dig it if it's, you know, if it's a prior fat. It's just, to me, it's unique in a way. You know, you've never seen anything like that, just that full cover. And I always think it's really nice to see the adjustments they've made to the beast tribes, the reflections. Right. Because you can see those, like, minute details, you know. Scale skin changes, the appearance of fur on one of them, the Mord who don't even wear helmets, so you see their full face now, and they have hair. Like, it's just like the little things that they do to bring out the differences between the tribes, the dimensions version of the tribes.
So yeah. I'm gonna put them on blast here. Does this mean for the Kikurn that they are not gonna eat babies in Lalafell? Because they do that. We know they do that on the source. They get put on blast for it all the time, and I'm gonna put them on blast now.
They do have a taste for meat. They do have a taste for meat on the source. I'm not sure about that on the first. We'll see. It is a Disciple of the Land themed beast tribe, so
yeah,
maybe
so we can't
just
trade them babies.
Maybe it's just fruit. Maybe it's just fruit and
maybe they're vegans this time.
Yeah, we'll gathering like salt and stuff. We'll see.
I mean, maybe like I like that we got the Kikurn. I mean, they do terrify me the way they kind of jitter when they stand there. I'm wondering if they're going to remove
shaking,
that.
Yeah,
right. The shaking and their creepy little fingers. It's like, okay, guys, babies are not a valid turn-in for this expansion, so you're going to have to eat something else.
Okay, I do have to ask, how many of you get, or how many classes in crafting in land, or hands in land, have you guys got to 80?
So, I capped all mine.
Oh god, now I'm bad.
No, it's just like, it's this weird thing I do. After every expansion, I literally just take a month, and that's all I do is craft and gather. And I don't know what it is, but somehow I just managed to get that done. And then before I know it, I got all 80s, and I'm just like, huh. And then I just go back to my regular, you know,
regularly scheduled program
of running dailies for tomes. But it's just for some reason I'm able to just, for a few weeks just focus solely on that. And yeah, not this time around. They made it a lot like more fluid as far as, you know, getting the leaves done and things. And then the Crystarium quests are actually really nice XP wise. So
yeah, I will agree that those are a little bit more flowing than the regular class quests.
Yeah,
and yet I'm still only 70 to 75 on everything.
Okay, then I don't feel that bad. I got at least 4 to 80.
Yeah, and then
my crafting classes are lagging behind. Like I go in to do the Ishgard restoration stuff, and then I'm just like, oh, I ran out of crystals again. I have to run back to the FC house. Run back.
Crystals, yeah.
Oh yeah,
crystals.
Like, never ending need.
This like pinch my cheeks and call me a primal because I have eaten so many crystals over the last few weeks.
This is why Uldah is wrong, because they cast out the Ash Crown Consortium, and if we still had them, crystals would be cheaper. That's my hot take of the day.
That is a spicy take. You know what?
Gul'dan is wrong.
I'm pretty sure the syndicate's going to come after you.
Bring back the Ash Crown. I need cheaper crystals.
Let's not upset the syndicate. Let's remember that, like, somebody almost died last time that happened.
Oh, no, people have died. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, that is problematic.
Oof. Well, Brightside, at least the next set of trial quest lines are not going to be involving crystals, so we can save a little bit of money there.
Yep.
Right.
Because, like, I don't know exactly where these are going to be taking place, but it does sound like the Empire is going to attack with these weapons. Or at least I feel like they're weapons. I don't know for sure.
Are you talking about
the Sorrow of Wurlitt? Is it Wurlitt?
Sorrow of Wurlitt, yeah.
Yes.
So, as far as I understand, at least from the naming convention alone, Wurlitt refers to probably a region of that, like, land bridge between Ilsebaard and Aldenard, the place where Gimlet Dark happened.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that all connects. There's also another region, and this I got from the lore book. It's called Wrothlet. So there's Wrothlet and Gimlet in that same area. So Wurlitt kind of matches the same conventions. So I think it's going to be in that land bridge. We're going to be trying to figure out a way to stop these weapons from crossing over the land bridge and entering into Eorzea. At least that's what I would assume. We don't have a lot of context, but we do know that Geis is going to be involved. He's been shown several.
Yeah, there was some aura NPCs in Allegan or Garlean looking stuff.
Which they're probably one of the local resistances, because due to the results of Alamigo and Doma being free, every other Imperial territory is currently declaring a revolution. So they might be one of those extra nations in Ilsebaard that's trying to fight back. So remains to be seen. But they do have different uniforms, so they're definitely from another place.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what nation they're from, because they're both Al-Ra, so that means Al-Ra have somewhere else that they're from. So.
Right, and the image of the thing in the trial, so what is it? What's it called?
The ruby weapon.
It's from 7, yeah, the ruby weapon.
The ruby weapon.
So it's really interesting.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it's so cool looking. I mean, terrifying, but...
Is this some Resident Evil vibes right there? I don't know if I like that.
Nemesis.
Right.
It's so exciting to me to see this thing, because not only is it a direct reference to 7 right before 7 comes out. So it's like a really nice, hey, you know, congratulations on the remake release.
And can go buy our other game.
Can we borrow your monsters? But it feels to me like a continuation of kind of a side plot in Stormblood that wasn't really touched upon. And what I refer to is the results of Castrum Abania and Aulis's research.
The Resonant.
I feel like it's going to bring up the Resonant. It's definitely going to bring up the existence of those bioweapons that Aulis was creating. When we fought, so the final boss of Castrum Abania, Inferno, like, looks just like the ruby weapon, but like in a tinier version. And if you remember when you killed Inferno, Aulis is in the distance and he says, this is very important data. And then that's it. It just cuts off. It doesn't add to it. It doesn't explain why he's so excited on why, you know, you kill his pet. But he's like, this is good. This is good. This was a great experiment. And you're like, for what?
What are you doing up there? And of course, you don't get the chance to ask him because you killed him.
And that's the thing. You killed him because he got too excited. It's funny because that's kind of what the lore book implies. He got too excited and wanted to join in the fray and didn't realize who he was fighting. And yeah. So you kind of...
He's like, oh my god, I have to report these findings. This data is so good.
He dies before he realizes, and you know, his true dream. But I feel like that's going to tie into that weird subplot of bio science that they were doing, where they were merging Magitek to flesh, you know, how we got Hypertune Grinawat and stuff like that. Those weird experiments that they showed off but didn't elaborate.
Really pursue after that, like once Shadowbringers came out, and like even with the war stuff going on, they dropped it.
So I think Ruby Weapon is like either not a prototype, but definitely like a final result of those experiments, I would feel. Because it looks fleshy, but it's also Magitek. So I'm imagining it's part of that same experiment. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it doesn't have to look gross enough.
You know what the vibe it's given me?
What's
Neon
that?
Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Big Mecha. Big Mecha.
Yeah. Look, why did you mention that hell show? Why you do this to me? I mean, it's true, but you shouldn't mention it.
Because I just finished it not too long ago, and it still creeps me out.
Oh, it really does. And no, you are right. It does have that kind of blah. I don't like it. It's more body horror stacked on top of body horror that we already had, and I'm just like, please take it away. Like, I like me some horror, but this is pushing it too far. Look at them teeth, girl. You get them whitened? What the hell is that? What's so long going to accept you and your ugly face?
Obviously the Empire.
That's true. They could have salons for abominations. I mean, word. I mean, they're not discriminating if they give him teeth whitening. That's fine, I guess.
Right? I don't know. I'm kind of curious, especially with, because obviously we have Ruby. What about Emerald? What other weapons could they possibly be bringing? So I'm kind of curious.
The other Pokemon games.
They said that this was going to be just very similar to the Four Lords, so there's definitely opportunity for four trials, and ooh. I would imagine if they won't be able to do the seventh weapon, because they kind of already mentioned Omega. Omega already exists in a different context. Yep. So if anything, I'd imagine at least Ruby, Sapphire, Emerald, and Diamond.
Okay.
Those are my guesses.
From Square Enix right now is more images to give me a sense of scale of this guy, because judging from the way he's, if you can even call it a he, like, I'm sorry, assuming your gender there, like, he's up a ways. He looks like he's tall, and he looks like he's beefy, and I'm just like, I don't like that. I really don't like how that bodes. Like, I really don't. Well, he looks like he's going to be massive.
So my thing is, so with 5.1, there's a special thing that you got to do at near the end of it. No, I won't go into it because, please do 5.1, but it's really good. There's a certain thing you see and like that you fight that kind of like ties into what I was saying with the experiments and things like that. So
I don't like that either.
Yeah, I think somehow, like, in a way, I'm assuming the Ruby weapon is at least the size of Ultima weapon, if not larger.
I think it's going to be slightly larger.
Like a modified version. Like, a definitely modified version of the Ultima weapon, like, created from both Magitek and Flesh. You know, like, some sort of weird, like, amalgamation of that with the power of the Ultima weapon. So it's going to be really crazy.
You love Nightmare Phil, you came to the right place.
Right, exactly.
The Garlians won't stop. That's the thing. They just will not stop, you know.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
The crazy thing about the Ultima or the Ruby weapon's existence, this implies that the timeline has been changed, because around this point when the standstill happened, when the stalemate happened, was when they unleashed Black Rose. Black Rose no longer is going to be a thing because the Emperor's dead. So this is the changed future. The existence of Ruby weapon coming to attack Eorzea is a new future. So we have no idea what's going to happen with this. All sorts of things can happen with this, because the planned future as it happened has been entirely erased by the actions of the Crystal Exarch. So it's really crazy. Like, I'm just I'm excited. I want to see it all.
Where is this roller coaster in this theme park going to go this time?
What is this new future? It already contains now biomechanical weapons, so how much farther will the Garleeds go without their bomb?
Oof. That is very scary stuff.
Speaking of more bad bosses, the Edenverse. I was so happy. I was like, oh, look at that concept art, look at that area art, I love it. Gimme Granddad. But we talked about this last time, didn't we? I was just like, yes, give me Remu.
We dabbled a little. We got an update from the website, though. So, we were talking about Remu and the Thunder Plains reference, but now we have the update on the website showing us the first rendered pictures of Gaia. And so what I thought was really interesting, if you look really closely to her design, her outfit and kind of her demeanor, her style matches very, very close to what Reen looks like. The outfit and everything that they're wearing. Like, they have the same sort of style blouse. They have the same open sleeves. They have the same choker design.
Same role.
In the same role. You know, she was identified as an Oracle Darkness. So I'm really curious, because the website seems to imply she's going to continue being the bad person, and that somehow we're going to have to help her free her away from that darkness control. So it's like, I wonder what that's like. Are we going to continue what we're doing with the elements, and then she's going to wake up and be like, stop, and then, you know, then we'll have to deal with her, or like, how's that going to play out? It's going to be really cool. So I'm curious. And we get to see a hammer too, so I'm excited how this hammer is going to play out.
Yeah, a lot of people have been looking for a hammer class for a long time. I don't think we're going to get a hammer class. I think hammers will be more, we'll see them more in game for different classes.
Definitely maybe. aesthetic for like warriors and stuff, but
right.
As far as a full class by itself with just the Warhammer, I don't know if they'd be able to. It would feel too much like a warrior.
Right, exactly.
You would have to find a very unique process to like kind of like cut it away from the warrior ideal.
Right, which is why I thought, okay, maybe they'll put the weapons in game, but maybe not necessarily make a new class for it. Because we have seen one hammer. There is a dwarven model, I believe, for warrior that looks like a hammer.
Yeah, I have it. It's fun. For some reason, just being able to do all my warrior abilities with a hammer is just, it's fun to watch.
Like, I bet it looks good, too. Because really warrior good. Feels like it has some punch, so being able to smash things with a giant hammer, it's going to be good.
I get most of the time when I'm wearing that, I run into a dungeon, everyone's like, nice hammer. I'm like, thanks. So
thanks, man. Hey.
So, it's good stuff. I love that hammer. But yeah, so, who knows what's going to come forth from the Edenverse, you know, as they call it. So, it's going to be cool.
Except the heavily hinted Remu. I'm pretty sure we're going to
get the heavily hinted lightning references, and then, you know, Gaia's goth daughter. Essence, right. You know, she gave the goth daughter vibes we get, so it's not a phase, mom. So
God, it better be a phase. I don't want to have to kill her.
Oh, wow.
Go home and change, young lady.
you wipe the eyeliner off now.
Oh, no.
You can't go out dressed like that. You're not my real mom. The Warrior of Darkness has just stood there like, I'm everybody's mom at this point, or dad.
Have you heard what I've done in this realm?
Do you know
like,
who I am?
Hand sweeps over the nations you've freed. I'm like, I'm everybody's mom.
I don't know. Like, a part of me is very excited, especially with, and we're going to go across that briefly at the end here. But in 2 days, we get to find out more information. Part two. I don't think they're going to spoil too much because like they kind of kept a lot of stuff under wraps.
Right.
And if I'm not saying we will, everything goes right, we might be able to record one and kind of be like, oh, this happened. Oh, I don't know.
Right. Exactly.
It depends.
It does depend. It depends on hurting us like cats, really.
Yeah. And like, I know one of the episodes that we wanted to record was talking about all the old relics and stuff. And
yes.
Now that we're actually kind of going into 5.0 relic weapons, I'm kind of thinking we should come back on that topic. And
yeah, we can talk about that.
Do it before all the new relic stuff comes out, or before more of that stuff is real. But yeah, that would be nice.
Like I would love to get one of our editors, especially the glamour. I don't know if the glamour specialists. I can't say the other term because I'm not sure. But get them on the show and talk about the glamours and stuff. And like, I'm curious if we're going to get just the weapons, or if they're going to try to do what they did in Stormblood and be like, hey, you can upgrade your armor. Oh, it's not upgradable anymore. Sorry.
I'm just glad that they have said it is going to be more of a singular thing that you do by yourself than, oh my lord. Like, I'm glad they're taking it away from people, from Eureka.
Needing to farm with friends.
Because no shade against Eureka or anything. It was fun for a little bit, but it's almost gotten to the point where people are struggling to do their older relic weapons now, especially on less populated servers, because nobody's doing that content anymore. Yeah. Everybody's done it.
And I think the sad part was the intent behind Eureka was to replicate the old MMO feel. It was supposed to replicate the Final Fantasy 11 days, the EverQuest days.
The cooperation, right?
That, you know, and we as new MMO players have no reference. We have no context. A lot of us, for most of the people I've met, especially myself, Final Fantasy XIV is our first MMO. So we're...
you know what I was about to say there.
Hold on.
That's bold of you to assume.
It was a different audience at the time, right, that was raised into the Final Fantasy XI style play, and that's what they were trying to give back. But in doing so, they completely leapt over the heads of all the newer players and frustrated a lot of them. A lot of people got extremely mad at Eureka, and I saw a lot of vitriol in regards to the subject. I don't, there's no means to say that that was unwarranted. I can understand it, but I definitely think it was just because the content wasn't meant for new MMO players. The content wasn't meant for people that had just started with Final Fantasy XIV. It was meant to be nostalgic to those that have been around for
meant to replicate something from an old era.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it just didn't work in today's, in our setting. So that's why so many people just bleh.
Well, that's indicative of the game industry as a whole, I believe, because there has been a move away from cooperative play to singular. And you do get MOBAs and, turret defense games or tower defense, and other stuff where you can bring in a second player. But it's niche, and there are select big titles that allow you to do that. And otherwise, it's just very focused on you as opposed to you and a group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking as one of these old-time folk players...
All right, Brandon.
Oof. Like, don't get me wrong. I was in high school when I first got my hands on a copy of Final Fantasy XI. Loved it. Yes, it was a pain in my side having to go to this one lady. Oh, yeah, it would be nice if you can bring me a copper ring. And then, nothing telling me, oh, you can craft it. Oh, you can purchase it from here. Oh, by the way, you need to bring it back to her, not to this person she keeps mentioning. Yeah. I'm kind of happy those days are kind of gone. Because
there are certain things about old-timey gaming that are a lot tougher. Because my first MMO was UO, so Ultima Online. And that's just some tough stuff. There are some things I'm glad they've done away with. Permadeath.
Yeah.
losing all of your stuff.
Losing EXP. That was a nice slap in the face refresher of, time.
Yeah, I did not love that for us.
Because, Final Fantasy XI, don't get me wrong, I played a Dragoon there. A Dragoon, if you sub, by the way, you had subclasses, which is kind of weird, but anyways, if you subbed a mage class, your wyvern would vomit on you to give you health. Don't ask me. Don't. Oh, no, how
nasty.
I kid you not, I soloed from level 30 all the way up to level 60 because no one wanted to party with a Dragoon. other Dragoons.
The only person who loves me is my wyvern, and he shows me he loves me by puking on me.
What a life.
God, what a life. I don't think I'd miss that either.
Just kind of to point out which creature it was that I died a lot to. You go to Idleshire, you exit on the east side. Or sorry, is it east or west side? I think it's west side, where are the bears and you're heading to Matoya's cave.
Right.
And right as you exit, there's those crawlers.
No, like that.
Yeah. There's a place in Rollinberry Fields, and I'm talking to Final Fantasy XI names now. There's a place called the Crawler's Nest. And this was back when if you got aggroed and you ran all the way to the zone, and I do repeat, all the way to the zone, everything that you aggroed, including everything on the very bottom floor, would follow you and kill everybody inside.
Oh my god. Wow. Yeah, let's just kite the mobs for everyone. I don't miss that either. I like the advanced.
And that was happening in Eureka too. People used to kite the mobs right
into kite the mobs through you. Just leave me alone. I just want to stay in my own lane and farm my own stuff.
One of the worst things about 11 was Volcarune Dunes. The first thing you hear, you've heard this name because it is that famous. The first thing you hear is "choo choo goblin train coming in." Better run for Sylvina. It's like,
oh my god! No.
So I'm happy that they didn't copy the whole. Oh yeah, you aggroed everything in this zone, and it's coming to the exit. Have fun with that, guys.
I'm glad they have a range now. A nice, moderate range, which means you can get rid of them. Because, hell no, as a gatherer, absolutely not. No, like, occasionally, even, like, I remember being leveling through Heavenswood and leveling my mining, and all of a sudden, a hunt shows up. I think it was one of the A ranks or S ranks, like, shows up right next to me. I'm like, oh, hello. You're a pretty big birdie boy right there, aren't you? Why are you following me? Please leave me alone. That was terrifying. I cannot imagine that thing following me across an entire zone and killing all of my friends as I run past them screaming for my existence.
Yes. I will go over more Final Fantasy XI stories, especially ones that include Wyvern Head or Wyvern Tail. I will talk about those in other podcasts because those are ones that are just going to be gold.
Mm-hmm. The stories from 11.
The stories of 11.
Yeah. Getting back to it, though, I do like that they have detached it. Like I said previously, I do like that they've detached it. They're going back to what looks like the old format of doing quests and stuff for your relic. And I'm just like, yes, I missed that. I did. Mm-hmm. I didn't miss the Atma grinding. Like
working together, but if you needed to do it by yourself, you still had the chance to do so.
Right.
I think that was the hardest part was Eureka weapons you cannot do by yourself. At a certain
point, it's forced cooperation.
Yep.
And that's what made it hard because some people just time zones didn't match up. You know, the content, one person would get way frustrated and would leave and not want to participate anymore. Like it just
right.
Bend itself to that sense of cooperation. Like they gave you the opportunity, but that was it. There was
a good idea, but
incentive.
You know, a case of close, but no cigar. You know,
yeah,
they tried.
The lore is crazy though. Eureka lore is pretty great. I wrote two articles on it. I think the last two articles in the magazine, previous magazines.
Oh, so if I read those, I basically get the whole thing and I can just.
Yeah, and you won't have to do it.
Yes.
That's 100% why I wrote it. I wanted to give people a chance to not have to suffer and just read those two articles and get the whole story.
That's another complaint. The fact that lore was gated behind it.
The biggest reveals were at like level 50. And it was like,
And that was a big thing for a lot of people, myself included, because I'm. At the time when that stuff came out, when I think Pyros is the second one.
Pagos. Pagos.
Yeah,
is the Pagos. Second
one. There we go. And I was Euro at that point, so I'd go on during my playtime, and there would be nobody there. It's crickets, you know. So I was just like, well, this is great. I guess I'll stay up until my American friends show up and help me with this garbage.
This was pre-nerf, so everything was like one-shotting and clipping and all nasty. Yeah.
The other thing I'm excited about for this.
Terrible.
Boza said it. Is it Boza or is it Boja?
Bajja, I think.
Bajja?
Not a heavy Z, but like.
Badger.
Yeah, like it like blends into the J. It's an interesting.
Okay, so Badger said it.
Bajja, yeah.
Bajja.
So, Hrothgar homeland, was it homeland or is it like a primary city?
It is. Where is what they built that up? Like it came, they settled there, and then over time built the citadel, and then it became their kind of like main place of occupation. But I do believe that they have other settlements and other locations. It's just more so that's like the network, that's the hub for the Hrothgar. So
right. So it says here that there's short stories, and that makes sense because. Stuff gets brought up in 1.0, obviously, which some people haven't played, short stories that some people haven't read. What about, it says, In A Realm Reborn right here. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell me where I can get those snippets of information?
Immediately, I come to this is funny because it's probably an off-missed point. Because when no one can skip Praetorium now, so one's paying attention to Praetorium now. And... There's a portion where Gaius and Cid are pretty much, they're kind of having a heart to heart. Cid's like, why are you wanting to talk to me now? But it ties in really well because Gaius goes to explain a little bit more about Cid's father and what was going on with Cid's father.
With now, Meteor and stuff.
Yeah, and that's definitely what it was all about, Meteor and everything that was related to that. The situation was Gaius raised Cid because Cid's father, by researching the Meteor, by researching Dalamud, was tempered and then no longer had desire to take care of his son. So in that time when he was tempered, Gaius raised Cid. Ooh. And so there's tension between the two of them because Cid, who's now a rebel of the state, who's going against the Garlean Empire, is technically facing his foster father. And his foster father is trying to tell him, Cid, my boy, you weren't meant to be a fighter. We know this. Both me and your dad knew you don't want to be doing this. And it's like, and that whole portion that ties up from the Bajja Citadel story. And in a nutshell, Bajja Citadel was destroyed because of tests with Dalamud. When the Garleans first made contact with Dalamud, a lot of people were aware of it. They say the Bajjans, but the idea is to insinuate the Hrothgar were aware of the testing to contact Dalamud, and they tried to do a lot of large scale rebellions to kind of stop it, and none of them were successful. And so right out of nowhere, Midas makes contact with Dalamud, and Dalamud responds with a massive laser of concentrated energy that had been sitting there for 5,000 years. We're talking about 5,000 years of sun just hitting that spot.
Oof.
Yeah. Wiped it off the map. It's gone.
Crispy.
There's nothing. And now the Hrothgar have no home. So that's where we get all the plot device for, you know, the Gunbreaker is tied into this. You know, the Hrothgar race is tied into this. Cid's backstory with his dad, you know, the reason why he decided to rebel. They even tied Omega into this at one point. There's a lot of tiny little, like, nuanced, like, connections that all build up to be the foundation for this territory they're going to show off in 5.2. So I'm super excited about it because it's pretty much since 1.0, we've been hearing about this place, but now we're going to finally get to see it. So it's going to be really cool. I'm excited.
Yeah, same.
I'm actually not going to lie. I'm getting really excited about this now.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of context to do with
our favorite fluffy boys. I want to know more about. It's just like, tell me more about my precious babies.
And I do say, I would say if you have the opportunity, there's no rush because I don't think they would do it so much as to gatekeep it. But I do feel if you would like more context, go ahead and try to level up a Gunbreaker or talk to your Gunbreaker friends, because the storyline ties in very well with what we're going to find out about the relic weapon place. So,
well, I guess I'll have to go and level Gunbreaker now because it's I love that lore.
I love not picking favorites, but Gunbreaker is a fun tank. Oh my goodness. You can do so much with it.
As a white mage, I'm just going to raise my hand and say super belied.
Okay, see?
I don't like that.
It super belied works when you communicate its use, when it gets like when it's planned. If you don't plan it, it's terrible. It's the worst move on the world. I've accidentally hit it a couple times, and I scream very loud because I'm like, I'm sorry. Like,
what
I hate is
when a Gunbreaker super belides right after I bennied them, and it's like, could you not? That's rude. That's extremely rude there, pal.
It's the biggest pet peeve of that move, definitely. But I have to say, it's definitely it requires prior communication because there's just, I refuse to hit it unless I say something. I'm like, hey guys, I'm going to use this now. Then I'll use it. And then I'll feel better because they're aware. But if they're not aware.
Use a skill that gives your healer a heart attack.
Yeah, because that's not, no one wants to see their tank suddenly drop to one.
No, absolutely not.
That causes physical tension. I promise you. When that
your
drops
soul
to one,
exits your body.
you break the dimension. Like you've sent. Like
I have a phenomenal Gunbreaker in my FC, but she's really good with her tanks. Yeah. She pulls like a maniac, but she knows that's how to awesome. Cycle her cooldowns and everything. But Super Beloid, when Gunbreaker, she does, still gets me, it's like, ugh!
Gunbreaker has really good cooldowns as well. But I do, I have a lot of fun playing it, and the lore is superb. Lots of references to 1.0 content, a lot of references to what will be this relic weapon content, and added additional information about the Hrothgar. So, pretty
cool. You heard it here. Endorsement. Go play it.
Nope.
Sounds like it's pretty good.
I have to say one thing about the Super Bowl chat. Only thing I know about this is that there was a meme going around that said vibe check, and it was in the party finder.
Yeah.
And it was Gunbreaker as the only one there.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Vibe check yourself.
Vibe check.
And don't get me wrong, the lore for Super Bowl is really cool, but it's still scary. So, because you're like you're channeling all your ether in a singular cartridge, and that's what you launch to create your shield. It's your entire ethereal essence into that one bullet.
Yeah, so that's why terrifying.
That's why it brings down one. But it sounds cool. I mean, that's like.
So Gunbreaker's not getting an update because it's good already. We've heard it's that. Really, we said it's that. Good. Red Mage is supposedly getting an update. They were the only they were the only class mentioned, though.
They do say they're going to go over it a lot more in part two, so we're going to get the deets about every change. But
now it's just Red Mage.
Specific reference was Red Mage and other classes, so we're going to see what they mean by other classes. Hopefully, this is just to inspire a motivation, maybe a little bit of help to our poor astrologian friends out there struggling. I'm hoping for the best here. I'm hoping for the best here. We'll see what happens. I can't foretell. I have no cards to foretell the future.
Right, we don't get to do that anymore.
So my cards were removed, so I don't know what the future holds anymore, but maybe that means they'll get their change that they're looking for. They did really good on Ninja. We gotta give the dev team
nobody can fault them for that.
Because Ninja, they even explained they just didn't have the time to do the changes. That's why Ninja was so bad in Shadowbringers. But as soon as 5.1 rolled around, they put their hands to work, and Ninja is great.
It's a big tasty now.
It's the exciting aspect of the possibility of new Mudras to come out now, because it's a global cooldown. You can weave it in a little bit better with your rotations. Your stuff does more damage now. It's so great. And I think that's a promise. The dev team is telling us, we will do our best with the time we're given. Just believe in us, And so that's why I'm like, hold out. Our poor astrologian friends are, wallowing right now. I get it. I understand. I want you to believe in your dev team.
Hold on just a little bit longer.
If not this patch, definitely the next one. At some point before Shadowbringers ends, I feel like they're going to do an adjustment that will help everyone out. So we'll see what happens. That's my. Just Ninja gave me a lot of hope for all future adjustments. So because that was just really good response.
But also is giving me hope is the changes they're making to Diadem. Because, oh my god, was that not the hottest pile of dumpster trash that
you ever did? I cannot. The stories.
The horror stories.
The horror stories of that place, and just the economy crash it created, because it would put these really rare items that only a few people managed to get. The weird... what's it called? The gear chain, spoils, where you would exchange spoils for.
Oh yeah, the spoils
for the items. There was a point where Heavensward crafting was really, really difficult as compared to crafting now, and there was a point a little bit further on, once you got to your level 60, you would have access to favors, and you would have to buy favors using blue scripts, activate the favors to find specific nodes, and when you find the specific nodes, you could harvest maybe like one or two items before the node disappeared, right?
It was so inaccessible to so many people because nobody had the time for that.
Yeah, because the amount of favors to just get enough to craft the specific items you were looking for was just wasn't okay. And then they go and say, "Fear not, go into the diadem and farm some spoils, turn in the spoils, and we'll get you those mats you dearly need for raid crafting and potion stuff. And everyone's like, yippee! They jump into the diadem. The drop rate for spoils are like 25%. Like, you're like, what is this? And you're dying every 3 seconds. You're not even like, you don't even have aggro. You're just calmly chopping a tree, and then this raptor comes out of nowhere, eats you, and you're like, hello? And
well, I didn't want to reenact Jurassic Park today, but thank you.
And you have to respawn like miles away from the point you found. You have to like fly all the way back there. No, don't even get me started on the fact they had ethereal currents that you had to get first before you could even fly. So you had to walk on sky islands.
Yeah, that was bad.
It was a hot pile of garbage, and I think we all agree. And the changes they are making. Yes, I bow to you, Square Enix. Thank you so much for making not only Diadem relevant again, in a good way, but making it make sense. It is Disciple of the Land exclusive now.
And Coven weapons. Oh, Coven weapons.
Crow's been triggered, and I'm so sorry.
Well, we broke Crow.
He's madder about this than he is about the fall of Amaral. Let's be cool here. Let's be real.
I didn't study a thousand years.
Shame on you for being madder about Diadem and the destruction of your home.
But how are you going to take weather that was exclusive to Azzi's Law, make it a specific triggering requirement for a floating sky island from the Maki raids that you could only access if you are able to go in with 30 people, because if you tried to do anything by yourself, that was an insta wipe.
And the 30 people requirement was dumb.
The drop rate for those weapons, because those weapons were the strongest weapons in the game, right? Level 280, right? Highest eye level, but they were ethereal weapons. So the stats were random, and it was a 20% drop rate after killing like 5 primal level enemies. Like, what on earth? Coven
okay,
weapons!
But it's okay, but they're fixing it, Crow.
Screams!
And if I remember correctly, it said you... There are mobs and stuff in there, but they don't attack you?
Yes. So they described it. It's a really interesting mechanic. So it's called what was the word they used? Atheromatic auger. And
yeah, like it sounds like an LB.
Resources. Yeah, it's like an LB. You harvest resources from the enemies, and he's like, it's a rocket launcher that turns monsters into resources. And I'm like, wow, that sounds really
that
crazy.
Sounds pretty rad.
I'm actually down to see this in action. I'm a little curious. Let me shoot
this.
This
is either
going
to be so good or so terrible.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this, you know, I guess you can say third time's a charm.
Huh. But, we don't know about that.
As long as I don't see anything related to coven weapons, I think I can take a breath and enjoy myself.
Yeah, and chill.
And not to... I still don't have the baby brachiosaur, and that is a crime in 7 states. I need that brachiosaur. It's the cutest thing on earth. I love dinosaurs, and I'm mad I don't have it.
Okay, Crow.
Somebody send Crow a dinosaur.
Crow. We need you to go to the DMV simulator and kind of wait that out, and maybe they'll process that baby brontosaurus thingy.
I want the dinosaur.
Oh god, yeah. Go sign like a million forms in triplicate, and then see if like one of your emerald buddies.
I'm so sorry, girl.
Don't wear the wrong outfit, or they'll probably not process your application.
Oh,
oof!
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome, though.
So I do know we have a bit more to talk about, but we are running out of time, guys. So, what are your like
next up?
Yeah, what are you guys predicting for this live letter this week?
Trailer, definitely going to have a trailer drop. They're
going to make
it
cry again.
So the trailer is going to be super ambiguous, but it's going to drop those. It's going to be everyone's going to try to figure out what scene goes where and then get it completely wrong. It's going to be great because I love the predictions. It's fun. it's fun because it's like, is that who I think it is? Is that who I think it is? And then patch drops and it's not. It's entirely someone else. And it's fun, though. I enjoy that.
They're going to bring Harris to death.
Oh, it's oh, so God, they, yeah. They play us like, oh, there's fish hooks everywhere. They get us good. But we'll get the trailer. They're going to give us the name of the region that's going to be for a relic weapon. That was promised. Job right. changes. That was promised. I think we're probably going to see Ruby Weapon in action. They'll probably have him show kind of his character fighting it, you know, kind of give us an idea of what it looks like in battle. I know he's done that a couple times. He might actually jump into the Bosch just Citadel and show us what it looks like. I think that would be really cool.
That would be really cool. I think one of the things that I'm not going to say that it's going to happen, but I think they're actually going to kind of show us. You know what? I retract that statement because just thinking about it now is like, oh, hey, by the way, you're wrong.
Hey, I mean, it's all in theory. It's all good.
It's all speculation for now, isn't it?
We got no evidence, so we'll see.
That is true. I will say one of the things I'm excited for is to find out when the fan fest and where.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Please.
Big one.
Yoshida, I need to save money.
Cause like, yes, because I went out and bought
the budget.
Yeah. I went out and bought a Pelican case for all of the recording gear. So that way we can record at fan fest.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cause I want to do a recording at fan fest with you guys.
I'm hoping it's not going to be too far away. I know they've said that there is not a Vegas, not a Vegas big enough in Vegas, a venue big enough in Vegas to hold it because of the demand.
We surprised them last 2018. Tickets sold out in 30 minutes. All 3,000 of them, and I mean it was packed. Everyone was there. Right. It was great, but
it was loved awesome. It.
They definitely realized that they're going to have to try to expand a little bit more because there was a lot of people that wanted to go so bad and didn't have a chance because those tickets were bought so fast. Yoshida even checked. He promised he would check. He went through every transaction and it was all legit. Not a single one of those were rogue or bots or anything like that. That was all legit. 3,000 payments was from people's cards. And it's like, wow, there's a lot of people who play this game and they love it. So yeah,
like there was a slight chance that I almost didn't get in there because when I clicked the payment button, it just sat there and did the whole
circle of death.
The circle of death.
Terrifying moment where you're just like, do I have a ticket or not?
And you want to hear something? You want to hear something wild? My internet died in the middle
of
My internet died in the middle of the purchase. And so all I get is, you don't have internet. And I'm like screaming and I'm like, no, did it go through though? Before my internet died. And when it loaded back up, when I replugged everything and loaded back up, it said, thank you for your purchase. And I melted into just mist.
Like, oh
I
was, my God.
The rise of stress to the relief was like physical levels, but yeah, that was intense. Internet dying, I still managed to get a ticket. I was like, I don't know how, but all right, thanks.
I'm gonna try. I don't know. I am still gonna try to purchase my own just in case, but I'm gonna see if Serena can pull at least one ticket for the podcast, so that way when we go into that Q&A, because you know, media teams get to go in for certain Q&As. Right. I would love to go in there, especially with my recording devices, you know, shotgun mic, not letting anybody know. And like record it and like play it back and like talk with you guys about it in the podcast.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
You know, we won't be able to publish that podcast until they're like, okay, you can publish it.
Until the NDA is lifted. But yeah, which makes sense. It's understandably,
we got to behave.
Protect their assets. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But like, hands down, I went and bought a Pelican case just for all the recording equipment. I have like 70 pounds worth of recording equipment.
Yeah, I've already started getting all my cosplay supplies together, so I better get a ticket.
Yeah, I need to get my cosplay done too.
We all got that chance.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for that information gets dropped, even if it's just the location and they haven't decided on like days.
I mean, location's a big deal because then you can start saving up for your tickets. You're playing tickets.
Right, and you have an idea of how much those tickets are going to cost and how long you'll have to take off for it.
Yeah, like that alone would be enough. I'd be very thankful to hear a location, if not a date. And then that way I can just work with what I can get, you know?
Right, exactly.
So,
yep, same here. And like, if it, I'm not saying it will, but if like it's somewhere close, like say Salt Lake City, Seattle, like I could drive there. I could be perfectly fine with driving. Oh, yeah.
But like, that was Vegas to me.
Yeah. If it's like Vegas or say Anaheim in California or like Chicago, New York, definitely going to fly on those because I'm not driving across the country.
Nah.
My regalia is not that big.
But just a final thought for all our listeners. How does everyone feel that there's a potential chance we might get a trailer for 6.0 in this year?
I'm dead. I'm dead. Deceased. Give it to me. I'm so ready. My body is ready.
The chance that 6.0 can be announced this year. So, like, it's going that fast. We're like, we've already zoomed past, you know, the Shadowbringers arc to a point that they can announce 6.0. And I'm like, ah! But
all right. So from what I heard, they're going to do FanFest in Japan first, correct?
I think that was a theory. Yeah, rumored because of the names. The names were not in the same order that they were on the flyer. They usually say United States, Japan, or United States, Europe, Japan. And then this one that came out was Japan, United States, Europe. So that's what the assumption. So we'll see. I mean, we don't have anything else outside of that. So
speaking as, because I went to this last fan fest and, you know, dropping the whole announcement trailer and that duty and unions, like just the excitement in room alone. Just like, I felt like my heart was going to pop out of my chest because of that's how much excitement was in that room.
We're going to be deaf.
Oh my God. And then, like, you know, seeing the Warrior of Light walk and everyone's like, they're like, oh yeah. And then, you know, the Karibu coming down and just, everybody just
awesome.
So much excitement.
Where will we go? What will we do?
Yes, if the U.S. is second in line for that, it's not going to be as exciting as that moment there for at least the U.S. Because you know we'll obviously have this stuff before then.
But we'll get, as U.S. we'll get the first class announcement. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Like, that excitement's going to be off the charts.
And there's a potential chance for a new healer. So
yeah, especially if Yoshi-P comes walking out in the outfit like he's done in the last two fan fests.
He's definitely going to wear a t-shirt in Japan that's going to reference the class. And then we're going to be theorizing until the next fan fest when he'll walk in the outfit of the class. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I will admit it was funny that when he walked out with Bugs Bunny and the, you know, racer stuff, everyone's like, wait, this isn't a job. Wait, what?
Yeah.
What? Bunny?
Yeah.
Vieira.
everyone got it within like 0.5 seconds. It was great.
Yeah.
To bring on the buns.
I still can't get over the people that were like, who managed to get the samurai reference from Spider-Man. That killed me. I was like,
right?
I don't know why he wore Spider-Man. And they're like, well, Sam Raimi was the director of the original Spider-Man, and that's the same kanji as samurai. And I was like, what? That can't be that. That can't be that.
That obscure.
And then Yoshida said, yeah, you guys got it pretty quick. And I was like, what? Like,
who, though?
That's like, it was, I know I saw it posted. I don't know if it was a Reddit post or somewhere, but I know people were already making the assessment. They said that, you know, the Spider-Man t-shirt was supposed to represent the samurai. And I was like, whoa, how? And like, they were right. And I was like, oh. Okay. I'm gonna sit back now because I don't know kanji.
So getting more of those predictions this year.
It's pretty exciting. Yeah, love the t-shirt game. It's always a really fun thing to see. So
yeah, and of course now there's a truck outside that's making all these loud noises. So that's it for today's episode, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it.
It's all the DOLs going to DDM. That's what all the logs are.
Yeah,
they're going for them turn-ins.
Time to get some real XP.
Yes, time to get the real EXP. So I have a final total for at least the end of this podcast with 10 votes right now. And by the way, you guys still can vote until next Tuesday or Tuesday as you're listening to this. We are currently sitting at 50% are yes, and then the other 50% still say hands down he is Elidibus.
Has no one voted no?
No one has voted no yet.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I am okay with that.
Yes. Thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you guys enjoy our little poll thing, and we'll also do more fun things like this because I'm having a lot of excitement having fun doing this.
Talking trash, throwing shade in the middle of the podcast. Great.
Yeah. Woo!
Yeah. So, you know, if this keeps going the way it is going, we might do this not quite like every podcast, but definitely we'll do it again in another podcast. Maybe
I
not
promise,
same.
I promise you can shade me next time. I promise.
So until next time, guys, we wish you all a wonderful eve.
Bye.
Bye.
AetherStream is part of Aetherflow Media, a community-based project with a focus on Final Fantasy XIV. Aside from this podcast, we produce web content and our magazine, Aetherflow. And if you like what you see and hear, consider joining our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/aetherflowmedia. All funds go towards providing you with the best possible content that we can create.